Welcome to Witch Hunt, the podcast covering past witch trials and the modern day witch hunt crisis. I'm Josh Hutchinson.
And I'm Sarah Jack. It's March, Women's History Month. This week, on March 8th, it will be International Women's Day. The International Women's Day campaign's theme is Inspire Inclusion. We are excited to have Dr. Samantha Spence back. Her expertise in law and gender equity profoundly ties into the theme of Inspire Inclusion, particularly relevant during Women's History Month and International Women's Day. Welcome, Dr. Spence. How is witchcraft accusation violence a grave issue of gender inequality and exclusion?
It is a grave issue of gender inequality and exclusion for many reasons, but overall because it disproportionately affects women. And what it does is it perpetuates harmful stereotypes and discrimination based on gender. And it does it in a numerous way. So one of the ways is that it targets particularly vulnerable women. For witchcraft accusations, they are mainly elderly women or widows or those from marginalized communities who become the primary targets. And they used to scapegoat and target these women who are perceived as vulnerable or who deviate from what the society pursues as normal. It's very much rooted in gender power dynamics. And within this narrative, women are perceived as inferior, powerless, and this is why they are more susceptible to these malevolent supernatural influences. What they do is they reinforce this patriarchy and they maintain control over men, control over women's behavior, autonomy, and social role. It's used as an exclusion tool, a stigmatization from their communities. There's violence, intersectionality, which I think we'll come to later on, that it intersects with various other forms of oppression. And it impacts predominantly on women's rights, the fundamental rights to life, dignity, freedom from violence, and it undermines the efforts to advance gender equality, empowerment, and social justice because it's constantly perpetuating these harmful stereotypes and limiting women's agency in and participation in public life. It affects every single angle of women's lives, very much so.
How do accusations of witchcraft serve as barriers to women's inclusion?
Socially, they are socially excluded from communities if accused, so they can be shunned by neighbors, relatives, and their own families. And that leads to isolation and exclusion from society. And women are sometimes mostly left vulnerable and on their own. Not only that, they are marginalized economically as well because they can lose their livelihood and communities will drive them out and then they refuse to engage in any form of economic transaction out of fear of superstition. And this then drives this deeper cycle of poverty and deprivation. They lose the family, they lose the community support. They are subject to physical violence and harassment. They result in hindered access to healthcare and social services and can be denied medical treatment because they're stigmatized. And that status of being stigmatized, again, it exacerbates this vulnerability and perpetuates exclusion from mainstream society. And that leads into access to justice and legal protections as well, because once they're accused, this stigmatization can often perpetrate through every level of society. So people don't want to help them. Education, I know, is the final other one because, again, they may be denied educational opportunities. And this stigma attached means that school, people just don't want to associate with people who have been accused of witchcraft through the stigma. So there's, again, multiple different barriers there, social, economic, legal, educational, that impacts on this.
Those barriers that you discussed really highlight that this is a critical issue of gender inequality and exclusion. What are some of the main complexities of addressing violence and discrimination against these women who have been accused of witchcraft?
So these accusations primarily target women, and they are primarily targeting the vulnerable and the marginalized in society. So what that does is it perpetuates inequality. It reinforces discriminatory norms and attitudes towards women. It's also systemic discrimination because they're rooted in deeply ingrained patriarchal beliefs and social structures And these are the ones that prioritize male authority and control over women's lives. So accusations then will serve as a mechanism where it enforces conformity to these traditional gender roles, and it punishes women who dare to deviate from what is the expected in society. And again, violence, human rights violations, mostly women who are accused of witchcraft are subjected to various levels of violence, physical assault, torture, murder. And these are human rights violations, like dignity. Women should be able to live their lives free from any form of violence. And things that I've touched on, again, this social exclusion and marginalization that perpetuates these cycles of poverty and deprivation and social isolation. And the barriers, justice, education, healthcare, undermining gender equality, and again, intersectionality, which I know we're going to come to, is another issue there, because not only are they discriminated for being a woman, you then discriminate on so many different levels. It just causes so many issues there. It's just a vicious circle of oppression.
And how do witch hunts happening now affect the next generation of women?
They can be profound, they're multifaceted, and they affect the well-being, social relations, and again, access to resources. And I think for the next generation, some of the problems we'll have is that the psychological trauma where they're growing up in these societies where witch hunts occur will have long-lasting psychological effects. Witnessing the persecution, the violence, the ostracization faced by older women, might be their mother, their grandmother, it's going to have a massive effect on their mental health and well-being. And again, the stigma associated with witch hunts might then pass to the next generation of women because the belief that it could be inherited. It causes rifts within families. So it puts the younger generation against the older generations, because whose side do you want to be on in this witchcraft battle? Do you want to side with the accusers, or do you side with the victims? If you side with the victim, you automatically become tainted with the same brush.
Considering your extensive experience with the UN and your work on harmful practices, what strategies do you find most effective in promoting inclusion and preventing violence against women accused of witchcraft?
As a lawyer, I have to say legislative reform and enforcement, but we all know we can strengthen legal frameworks and ensure that there's enforcement of law and criminalize harmful practices, but this does not work in isolation. What we need is a holistic approach, awareness raising and education. So the work that you're doing in the podcast and the awareness campaigns, educational programs that challenge these beliefs and stereotypes, people talking about this, but also targeting the community, religious leaders, policymakers, and other stakeholders. Let's get this conversation going. And engaging communities and empowering communities is key there. Because the only way you can engage the local communities is by empowering the local actors and local women's organizations, grassroots leaders. But if you start to build these partnerships and foster this dialogue, then you can promote this kind of intersectional conversation. And if you're training and building capacity amongst the people in those communities, or the educators, or the healthcare providers, law enforcement officials, you're trying to sensitize them to the needs and rights of these women affected, because they understand the issues. And I think a lot of it is that they don't understand the issues. Therefore, you don't know how to respond effectively to these issues. And two of the key ones here is international cooperation is key, because this isn't just an issue in one place. This is an issue everywhere. And this means that everybody has to join up and engage. So multilateral organizations, human rights mechanisms, they're for everyone, they're not just for the few. Civil society, get people talking, raise awareness and advocate for policy change at a national level, absolutely, but also at an international level. But one of the things that is missing is data collection and research. We all research into this area, but it has been raised again, and it was raised recently at the UN in Geneva when I was there, that there's an issue with data collection. And the problem with data collection is that, one, it's hidden. Two, people don't want to talk about it. And three, countries don't want to say, oh yeah, we've got a problem here with witchcraft accusations. Also, a lot of the time, it's not on the agenda. So there's problems there with how do we get this data collection if there's nothing in place to collect the data within these communities and within these countries? And that's powerful because you need the data as the evidence to prove what you're saying is happening. And then you can get the policies and the everything integrated into the mainstream. And it has a top-down, bottom-up approach, really, that we need to meet in the middle. And everybody has to work together. And that's the key.
And working together, how do we collectively forge a more inclusive world for women?
We need collective action. So from everyone, so commitment from individuals, from communities, governments is key. Civil society and also the private sector. And what we need to be doing is challenging these gender norms and stereotypes because they perpetuate inequality, they perpetuate discrimination. So let's promote positive representation of women in the media, in education, in popular culture, and challenge these harmful stereotypes that are limiting women's role. Invest in education, equal access to education for men and women, boys and girls, is essential because you're empowering women, you're expanding their economic opportunities, and you're enabling them to fully participate in society as leaders, as innovators and agents for change. But you're also educating men as well on women's roles in society. And that's something that is key. And strengthen the laws, make the laws equal, promote women's rights, address gender-based violence, and criminalize harmful practices. And another thing that's key is supporting health and well-being, because access to healthcare, including sexual and reproductive healthcare services, is vital for women's health and well-being. And in many places, there's barriers and stigmas attached that women don't receive this care. We need to promote this. And again, this comes back to this point of allyship with males, men. Engaging men and boys as advocates is key, and it's something I do. I work with a lot of men to have these conversations because what you do is you're challenging this toxic masculinity and promoting positive masculinity, but through the mouths of the people who are male. So as a woman, you're saying, okay, it becomes an attack on men, and that's not what it is. But when a man's saying it, it's very different. And you're then challenging these roles and the respect for women and fostering solidarity between men and women, not putting them against each other, which is quite common in this fight for women's rights.
Would broader recognition of harmful practices as common forms of gender-based violence yield substantial impact in inclusion efforts?
Yeah, it would. It needs to be recognized. Harmful practices per se need to be recognized. So heightened awareness of what the extent and the impact of these practices are. And that can then shed light on the systemic nature of gender-based violence and the comprehensive strategies to address it. And I know this very much so. You talk about witchcraft accusation, and people have no idea. But if you showed someone a visible picture of a woman who had been tortured or murdered or beheaded, then that gives it a very different narrative. And policy attention as well. Resources, governments need to prioritize funding and policy initiatives aimed at targeting these practices, legal frameworks, accountability, support for survivors, recognizing that harmful practices is an issue and empowering survivors to seek help and support as opposed to ostracizing them and blaming them for the abuse that they've suffered. Because what that does is if you empower them and give them support, it validates their experiences and it reduces the stigma and shame from communities, but also from themselves. And it increases awareness and access to services, so legal aid, counseling. And that, again, has this kind of cycle of preventing and education, because you can then start to think, okay, if we're recognizing harmful practices, then how can we get that out there? How can we raise the awareness through education? How can we then develop these targeted interventions? How can we change the attitudes that perpetuate these practices? How do we do that community level? How do we do it at national level? And then how do we do it at international level? But it's very much a collective approach here that we need.
Thank you for listening to Witch Hunt. Have a great today and a beautiful tomorrow.